All right, welcome in. We are live. Me from Brand Lunch Coliseum, Derek Young, live from an undisclosed location, ready to talk about the Wildcats and their win back in the win column. They do it in a big way over West Virginia tonight, 73-60, the final score for K-State in the win. And I mean, I think some people probably would have thought if the Cats were going 1-1 today, it would be the women that picked up the victory, but unfortunately they fall to Colorado. But K-State came out of the gates hot and didn't really let up until the end when, you know, there wasn't much time for West Virginia to stage a big comeback. And I'll just start off by saying I thought that the crowd was impressive tonight, considering obviously how things had gone for K-State. They return home after two on the road and how everything went down. But they get the 73-60 win. It's also funny, there are two Big 12 wins now, both top 25 victories. So, D.Y., what did you see from how the Cats performed tonight?
They kind of did what KU did to them, right? They basically won the game in like the first 6 or 7 minutes of the game in West Virginia. Because if you take away that first, you know, initial rush where I think Kansas State went up 19-2, West Virginia outscores Kansas State the remainder of the game. Of course, Kansas State's probably playing a certain strategy there that's conducive to West Virginia getting in, needling in there a little bit and not letting them get too far. Because I think they wanted to coast and kind of play the possession game to make sure that they won. It's probably the best game that they played all year, but just because the second half got a little wonky, there might have been a game or two early where you probably felt as good, but you've never felt better than you'd have for a single half than the first half. And quite frankly, I thought it was because it's the two guys that you've just been trying to push and shove and get to play a certain way all year. And for 20 minutes, they finally did. And that was Dub McDaniel. And I even thought Ugonna Anyenso.
Yeah, I mean, I think, and Jerome Tang now talking to White and Stance, we'll see if it gets too loud for people here. But, yeah, I thought that it was impressive the way Doug McDaniel started. And he had a good first half against Baylor, too. But it didn't carry over in the second half. Didn't do it really in this game either. But he was so good to start, and everybody else was kind of pitching in, doing their thing. And West Virginia early on, I mean, it's weird that a team like K-State that has lost six straight and really has nothing to play for, they came out as the more engaged team, the team that was more aggressive, that seemed like they wanted to be here, whereas West Virginia did not give off that vibe. They're not a team that is traditionally great at offensive rebounding this season, but they looked like they didn't have any interest in going and getting a rebound. K-State was actually going and getting some boards tonight. They were aggressive. They got good looks early. I think just all throughout, it was a really good showing by K-State to jump on them, and that propelled them moving forward. That's such a big thing for this team, because this might have been the final breaking point. I think it makes sense now when you see that they win this game. The buy-in was still there, both after the KU and Baylor losses. They were still preaching, we're close, the wins are about to come. Jerome Tang was saying it, Coleman Hawkins, other players. And now they finally followed through because they wanted it tonight. And again, it's not going to turn the season around and make it some special year, but it at least gives you some fun, and it was fun in here today. A really good crowd, and now I think they put together another win in the midweek against Oklahoma State, and then you have some confidence that when you get some other big games in here this season, like when KU comes to town, when Iowa State comes to town, you think, okay, this team is still going to fight and give me that opportunity to get the pride that I want as a K-State fan and seeing them win those games. So it's encouraging in terms of what you can maximize this season to be right now. And I know that's not a lot, but this team isn't done fighting yet. And that's encouraging to see.
Yeah. It's honestly, if we're going to, you know, like we have when it's deserved, kind of criticize Jerome Tang and where some of his shortfalls have been this year, he probably deserves a lot of credit for one, somehow maybe not completely yet, but somehow reversing the buy-in in a positive way, right? You are wondering, like, what is the care factor for this team? And then when the losses pile up, you're like, well, I can't imagine the care factor is going to get any better, but somehow it has. And I think Jerome Tang, you know, for for some of the stuff that he hasn't done right, that's one thing he has done right, because they haven't quit. And it was probably annoying for fans to hear them say the past few games is like, we're close, the wins are going to come. But I actually agreed with them at the time. Not that a lot of wins are going to come. We'll see about that. But I did think that they were actually playing better, that they were an improved team. I mean, there was a team for a stretch there that wouldn't have came close to leading Baylor by 12 on the road, or hanging around against Kansas and Lawrence, or having a chance to beat Texas Tech at home. The one right after losing to TCU was just completely uninterested. And somehow that switch has flipped. And what does that mean for the rest of the year? Yeah, maybe the product is a little bit more watchable, but it's probably not going to manifest itself into any, you know, relevant postseason aspirations, of course. But now you can kind of squint, and maybe we're thinking too far into the future, or maybe big picture, or maybe even overreacting to a few games. But now you kind of squint and see a future where, I mean, how much better is Doug McDaniel going to get between right now and the end of the season? And if that does happen, is it worth making him again try to build around him as the core for next year's team? Because they talked about that Houston model, and they're going to have to bring it back a certain number of guys for that to be anywhere near reflective. And I think it has to start with Doug McDaniel, and it would go a long way that if he continues to make these kinds of strides.
Yeah, I mean, I think you look at the game that he had, that to me, his play over the last couple of games has been probably bigger than the fact that they won tonight, is that it is encouraging that he's playing better. It seems like the buy-in is there. It looked like he was actually listening to Jerome Tang when he was trying to give him instruction during the game tonight. And, I mean, I wrote about it in our pluses, concerns, and surprises that will come up. But talking about Doug, he looked engaged, and that's one of those that it would be good for him and K-State both if this thing has gotten mended to the point where the relationship is good. They trust Doug McDaniel as not just a guy on the basketball court, because that's coming around too, but also as a guy that can be a teammate and a member of the K-State basketball program. If that all is coming together, I do think you bring him back next year, because it is about roster retention, keeping continuity, and he's obviously got a skill set. Like, we saw that he was a talented guy at Michigan. We saw those flashes. You want to try and extract that from him, and we do know that if one guy can get the best out of a player, like, there are some guys that they just don't have the mentality or the makeup for Jerome Tang to get through to them. But if you allow Jerome Tang to get through to you, it is clear to me that he is a good coach in that regard, and he could do some really good things for Doug McDaniel. So that, I mean, we've had a good stretch here. There's still over a month of the season left. It's going to be interesting to evaluate through that, but obviously what he gave you today, you would take back next season. 15 points, 6 assists, 3 turnovers, and the 2 of the turnovers came in the second half. So he was great in the first half, helped set the tone, set up other guys, did a lot of good in the game today for K-State. So I'm with you. I don't know, and I don't know that you meant it this way, but you said build around. I don't know that I would build the team around him, but you get closer to considering him being the lead guard and being okay with that, or at the very least saying, if this guy's playing 25 to 30 minutes a game for us next year, that's not a problem. I don't know that you would completely shut off, though, and I don't think you were suggesting this, maybe finding a guy that would be comparable to him or could split some more minutes, because this could all go awry at any given time. And he's shown this year with his offensive ability, it can be volatile even when I think he's been bought in some more. But, yes, Doug McDaniel has turned a corner. I think this is a good sign for K-State moving forward.
And he can even shoot better than he has. Like, today he shot better than most of the season, obviously. But he was just playing so fast in that first half, too. It was like he had that top speed and gear that we know he has, but he played that way for a full, every time, like, the whole first half. It didn't seem like he played that way the entire second half, so kind of got to get through to him a little bit more. But he was a little bit of a pest on defense. Kids had a really good defensive scout in general. I thought it seems like they had it mapped out. Like, when West Virginia, there was a few guys they were going to get into the lane and maybe try to do a spin move, because every time they tried to do that spin move, Kansas State was just there ready to pounce the ball out, and they forced a lot of turnovers that way. So, no, I think big step in the right direction, but Doug McDaniel can still do more. He could still play better for longer stretches. He could still play with more intensity for longer stretches, play faster for longer stretches, and he could still shoot the ball better. I mean, I think one of the things that's really hurt Kansas State is that Doug McDaniel went from a 38% three-point shooter last year to a 22% three-point shooter this year. So there's a few of those things that can still improve, and we'll see. I mean, if his trajectory continues, you really like what he can maybe be able to provide you, assuming as it all stays on the right track for next season.
Yeah, the shooting thing is where I think you would think it would get better. I don't think Doug McDaniel is as bad of a shooter as the numbers have looked this year from three. I think they would be more in line with what he did at Michigan. And I mean, as a team, I noted it earlier this week on the boards and on Twitter, but you look at really what the biggest problem I think for this offense has been. Drew and I, it felt like every show we did in the offseason talking portal, it was this guy would have been the best three-point shooter on last year's team. This guy would have had the highest shooting percentage. And for the most part, all of these guys came in and have really completely tanked in terms of their shooting. Only two guys are shooting it better from three this season than they did last year. That is Brendan Hausen, who's near 40%, and then C.J. Jones has upped his. The other guys have dropped off, and Doug and Coleman Hawkins had the most significant drops in their three-point shooting, and that's coming on less attempts a game. It's not like some guys who, you know, have maybe gone up a little bit. So it's just, I think there is more left in there. And I think Doug McDaniel, as long as you can start to get a clear picture of, okay, Doug could be back, Brendan Hausen could be back, then I think the coaching staff has to start to right now think about, how are we going to morph this offense moving forward? Because there have to be changes with the way that the offense has gone. You got to get better looks. You got to have some more movement, get things working in a better way. But the players are starting to look like they're moving in the right direction that could come back. And now it's just going to be up to who do you add around them. And we know that they need to make some changes in how they recruit transfers. And then also, how do you change the system of play on the floor next year? But overall, it's encouraging, and we'll see what comes out of that. The other thing that I wanted to get into with how today ended up playing out, K-State goes through, takes care of business. They were up 20 for a good majority of the game. David Castillo only plays 7 minutes today. I've been banging the drum for a while now. You got to play Castillo as many minutes as you can get. Just because experience and trial by fire is the best way to prepare him for next year in a lost season. Are you surprised that he only played 7 minutes today, and do you have issue with it, even though he didn't have the greatest day? He was pretty much a zero out there. He struggled at times. He also just wasn't easily seen. So where do you stand on the Castillo minutes situation?
Blindly, I think along the lines of you, and I have reiterated that in some of our writings and stuff as well, that I believe that it is better for K-State that he gets on the court as much as possible between now and the end of the season. With that being said, with how well that game started and how well the other guys were playing before you got to him in the rotation, I didn't necessarily have a problem with it in this isolated scenario. Because do you really want to interrupt the first great amount of success that you've had in a month? Probably not. And let's be honest, when they did bring him in as part of his normal rotation, he wasn't good. You didn't get a very good version of David Castillo, and he was probably hurting more than helping. So I think they got to let him work through it, like you said, and they'll come out, both sides will come out better on the other end because of it. But today might have not been that day, because I think you kind of let it go with the way you got up 19-2. Do you really try to prove a point with David Castillo the rest of the way when you're playing your best basketball? It would be look like you're punishing some of your players for what you've been trying to plead from them throughout the entire year that they were finally giving you.
Yeah, and I would say that I appreciate that side of it, because I don't, if you thought that it would really be so bad that it would tank your chances of winning and blow it for you. And I don't know that it would have done that, but it would have made it more uncomfortable than it got. I do think that this team needed that hit and that boost that came with winning a game finally. Like, and so if you didn't want to jeopardize that, or you wanted to just keep flowing the way it did, I think that is totally fine. But still, 7 minutes seem light to me. And I just, that'll be something to monitor moving forward. But also it's on David Castillo to continue to improve the way that he's playing and get to the point as this season wears on that it doesn't need to be out of charity and the hope to get better for next season. He needs to also start taking some steps to where he is commanding more minutes over the course of the year as it gets later on. And we'll see how that ends up looking. Obviously an opportunity, you would think, on Wednesday night against Oklahoma State when they come in to get more time on the floor, but we'll just see how that ends up working also, out.
What a since we're live, we can talk about this. Big choke job happening at Allen Fieldhouse right now. They had a 7-point lead with a minute left, and now it's in overtime.
Oh, well, I thought, you know, I hadn't paid attention to any of it. I thought you were going to talk about Houston, who at one point was 0-9 from the free throw line in the second half.
It was 66-60 Kansas with a minute left, and they had the ball, and Houston still sent it to overtime.
Well, good for the Cougs trying to get themselves willed
into
that.
They were 0-9 from the free throw line at one point in the second half, though.
Yeah, it was not good. Speaking of the free throw line, K-State wasn't great at the line today, but one of the things that they did well in this game, and again, they win by 13, so it's not the biggest deal, but they got to the free throw line way more than their opponent, and that had been something that they had struggled with quite a bit recently. And today they go to the line 14 more times than West Virginia. It gets them 9 more points at the free throw line, and that is encouraging looking forward. The three-point shooting has also improved for K-State over the last couple of games, and I think at various points there have been some better looks out there. So more and more things to kind of start to say this is turning around slightly. And like you talked about, it's not anything that matters for this year really, but like the Doug McDaniel situation is setting the stage for what comes next, you know, in 2025-26 and kind of beyond that, because the K-State Jerome Tang era, it's going to continue for a while. Like financially it has to. And I think also, as much as people are upset, and you deserve to be upset with how things are gone, it would be short-sighted to also, you know, disregard, I think, some of the things that Jerome Tang has done that have been good, because I think at the end of the day, he's still done more good coaching at K-State than bad. We'll just see how it looks moving forward. I also want to mention to everybody out there, you can throw your questions or comments in the comments section, and DY and I can react to some of those as they come across as well. One thing that I want your reaction and comment on today, DY, and maybe it was a little different since you weren't here in the building. What was your thought on the officiating that we saw tonight? Because it was pretty impressive in-house to see how bad and disgusting it looked.
Yeah, it was probably worse in person, but it didn't seem like it was great, even though Kansas State gets a lot more trips to the free throw line. I think Max Jones came up bleeding one time. There wasn't a whistle. The 5-second call seemed like there were like 3.9 seconds. It was an interesting day. One thing, not necessarily correct you, but what I would amend what you had said about the free throw line, they got to the free throw line but didn't shoot well from the free throw line. Kent State shot it well for the free throw line. Coleman Hawkins didn't.
That is fair.
They had 7 misses and he had 5 of them.
And that goes to, we talked about guys that had regressed shooting the ball. Coleman Hawkins at the free throw line. I mean, it really doesn't make sense, the point that it's gotten to this year. Like, that's almost that's just such a strange deal. I don't even think that's something that you can put on Coleman Hawkins. I think it's just something weird going on right now. Yeah.
Because the reason why I wanted to point that out, because Doug's been struggling at the free throw line too.
Yep.
4-4 today.
Gasson was good today.
David Gasson, 4-4 from the charity strip.
Which you need, because Drew and I talked a little bit about this after the game against Baylor, but then we brought it up just talking throughout the game about how guys that had struggled at the line in Gasson and Max Jones and Coleman Hawkins, those are the guys that are getting to the free throw line the most for you. Your worst free throw shooters are the ones that have been getting there the most. So it was good to see most of them start to make it.
They're the ones that can get to the rim. So
yeah. Okay. So in regards to the officiating, I want to play a quick game with you here. I'm going to get the timer out on my phone. I want you to count to five, like you're trying to get a 5 second count going. So when you start, or here, I'll say go, and then you start counting, and I'll stop when you give me the five. So go.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
A little slow, 6:41 on that.
A little slow, see?
A little slow. So, but there might be a little bit of a delay. You know, we're going over a video call and everything. So we'll see.
There is a question about pressing Tango, why Rich isn't getting any minutes. He's been asked twice and would not answer either time, just said he was going to answer the question.
Yeah, I think at this stage, it continues to just kind of be clear.
I think it's got to be off court that Jerome Tang doesn't really want that kind of laundry in the open. And so that's why he chooses to say that he won't answer the question.
Yeah, I think it's a weird spot for him to be in, because I understand, like,
you don't want to air out all of your dirty laundry. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's a protection thing. Yeah. You're looking at trying to show that, hey, I'm looking out for these guys. I'm not going to completely try. Cause we talk about other coaches all the time that
can hurt
from other programs that do just throw guys under the bus. And it's like, well, that's not going to do you a lot of favors moving forward.
Mick Cronin.
Yeah. And that Mick is just doing it because, you know, of basketball reasons. Some of the other coaches, like in football, they'll throw guys under the bus for, you know, whatever reason. But I think he's looking out for them, and that's a matter that they are probably just trying to handle internally. And if Buddy Rich isn't playing, then, I mean, think of the guys that haven't played this year for those type of reasons. They've come back after a game or two, or like the minutes have been reduced, but they've still been out there. We haven't really seen a guy go this extended amount of time without playing, especially when you think about the David Castillo stuff, where you want to play a guy that has a lot of eligibility left more. McCaleb Rich is in that exact same category, where he's got 2 years of eligibility remaining, and he has had some moments this year where you're really excited about what you've seen. But he obviously right now is not able to see the floor. So you asked about it after the Oklahoma State game, I believe. And that was the first time that there was the response of not wanting to answer that question. I think it's just how they're trying to handle things. They, you know, we'll see how it looks at the end of the year, but as of now, they don't want to just, I guess, throw anybody under the bus, and they'll keep it clean, and we'll see moving forward. In terms of, what does the rest of the season look like for you? Because K-State now 2-6 in Big 12 play. Again, they're not, unless they win the Big 12 tournament, they are not doing any postseason basketball. But now that they have a win, there is some momentum. You get an easy, relative to the Big 12, game on Wednesday night in Bramlage against Oklahoma State. What are some of the benchmarks that you want to see this team hit moving forward, either as a team or certain individuals that will continue to give you some positive feelings moving forward? Because the last three games, this is the best I felt about this team since when I thought they were going to be an NCAA tournament team and a really good team this season. I've got more positivity and better thoughts moving forward with this program now, next season and beyond, based on what I've seen.
Yeah, there was a time where I felt like they were the NCAA tournament team. I felt good then. And then I don't know if I knew that or felt that they were an NCAA tournament team, but I think I started to feel maybe good again after they beat Cincinnati in the way that they played against TCU, because I thought they played with the right intensity that game. And then the ship really sunk after that. And then I was probably at the lowest, of course. So this is the highest since that Cincinnati TCU stretch that I felt. What needs to happen the rest of the way to keep me encouraged, I would say, be competitive at home, even in the games where you're probably outmatched a little bit, like when Kansas comes here, when Houston comes. Does Houston come here? Yeah. No. No? Yeah, I believe
no
so.
Houston. It'll be Iowa State will come. Arizona will be here. And then I'm trying to think who else towards the top of the league will be here. But
yeah, those teams be competitive and then take care of business and maybe beat the ones that aren't those, right? Like when Oklahoma State.
Colorado, Arizona State.
Oklahoma State and Colorado and Arizona State. Oklahoma State comes on Wednesday to Bramlage. Win those games and snap this god awful losing streak at some point, please. Like that. Yeah. That has to happen. And to be honest, if you play like you did tonight, you're going to have a chance on the road a couple times probably because Arizona State will give you a game on the road. It's winnable, but they're also not bad. But I don't think Utah is any good. So I think winning in Salt Lake is doable. Maybe that's your best chance, I guess, the rest of the way.
UCF, we'll see.
UCF looks actually solid.
Yeah, they're playing good basketball right now. I don't trust Johnny Dawkins long term, and certainly the way he's crafted a roster. But
yeah, Cincinnati, Arizona State, and Utah, maybe those three.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Cincinnati, we know they haven't played well, and that environment, K-State almost navigated it last year, and those were two similar teams. This year, teams playing to a similar disappointing level, albeit, yeah, but they are comparable this season. So yeah, mm-hmm. I think it's nice that this team has a lot of games left, not just at home, but overall, that you think they can go on the road and be competitive in and maybe give you some more experience and then also just positive vibes moving forward that translate to guys being happy, wanting to stay, wanting to buy into what this program can be moving forward.
Yeah, if the intensity and buy-in switch has really flipped like we think it might have, then you're going to have a chance to maybe grab four or five more wins. Seven seems like a lot to me based on how I felt even a couple days ago. And it probably still is a little high. I'm probably overshooting it a bit. But it's like our pal Drew Galloway said in our group chat earlier today, outside of the top maybe seven, eight, I don't know if you want to stretch it to nine teams in the Big 12, that bottom seven is pretty beatable on any given night.
Yeah, and even the guys towards the top, Texas Tech and Baylor are like in the top six and seven of the league right now.
Baylor doesn't look good at all right now.
It's confusing. The Big 12 is pretty weak this year in terms of what it's been, and then more teams, it just adds a lot more craziness to it. I mean, that would be, this is a football thing, but for those of you that wanted to burn the world down after how K-State struggled, you're seeing it right now. Just more teams creates more parity and craziness and everything that goes into it. But I would say you look at what K-State has, the team that we've seen play over this last week, or really the last 2 weeks, because while it was ugly, they came close against Texas Tech.
Yeah,
they can beat Oklahoma State at home. They can beat Arizona State both times. They can steal a home game against anybody. And then you look the rest, like you said, Utah is a possibility, and then we'll see how UCF and Cincinnati are trending towards the end of the year when you go on those road trips. But the opportunity's there, and the overarching thing to me would be you just want there to be enough warm and fuzzy feeling to how this team is playing and hope that it leads to some guys wanting to stick around that you want to keep, and then buy-in that plays into how successful you can be next year with the pieces that you end up bringing in.
Yeah, and to be honest, good vibes can also create buy-in from even some that you still aren't getting it from now. Because did we think a month ago that we were going to be talking about Doug McDaniel possibly returning being a good thing for Kansas State? So we'll see. There's still a long way to go. Some more positive developments can still occur. What I would say is we probably go back to burn it down mode if you can't beat Oklahoma State at home. I think you got to win that game.
Yeah, I think you do too. I mean, this thing could flip on a moment's notice, as we know with this team, because there have been a lot of other issues with this team at various points. And we thought at other times this year, okay, maybe this is fixing things. Maybe the corner has been turned, and then you turn around the corner and you blow a halftime lead and get beat by 20 against Wichita State. You go and you think, okay, you beat Cincinnati. This is happening. You're up against TCU, collapse, the Frogs beat you, and then you have your worst performance of the season against Oklahoma State on the road, and you just don't look like you're engaged at all. And then they surprise you by looking like they want to win games against Texas Tech in Kansas and Baylor, and now they get over the hump against another top 25 opponent. So I don't think the roller coaster ride is done for this season by any means, but it is at least a roller coaster that has some more exciting highs to it than just, you know, the ride that five-year-olds can go on at the state fair where it's like it's very tiny ups and downs. This one, it's going to be some big ups and downs that you'll have to live with.
Yeah, at least it's not like total, it's not downhill the entire time.
Yeah, you just go up, you go up in the off season and then straight downhill and then it's over with. Fortunately, it is not that. All right, any final thoughts from tonight's game and then moving forward as we get ready for Oklahoma State on Wednesday?
Interesting. Doug McDaniel, the most minutes on the team, 31. And then you had six guys at 28 or five other guys at 28 or 29. So there was like six starters tonight. Like Jerome Tang sometimes likes to say, hey, I got six starters. Or, you know, he said that a couple years ago, said that last year. I think he's said that's really what he would like it to be. Tonight he did. He had, here's the minutes. Doug McDaniel, 31. David Gasson, 29. Max Jones, 28. Brennan Hausen, 29. Coleman Hawkins, 29. CJ Jones, 28. So he got what he kind of wanted. Some of that kind of, I think, was foul trouble. Might have necessitated a little bit of that. I know, yeah. Coleman Hawkins, Max Jones, and David Gasson, all three were in foul trouble in the first half.
Yeah, I mean, you got a lot from everybody tonight. Pretty much everybody gave you good minutes and everything. Doug, 15, you know, you had five guys in double figures. You talk about all the minutes distributions that were there. Brennan Hausen really was the only one that had, of the guys that scored in double figures, had a tough night contributing, but he still came away with five rebounds over the course of the game. And again, you know, some of those shots that he missed were not necessarily on him. Bad offense, also just being put in late clock situations that throw one up, but yeah, for the most part, I think it turned out pretty well for K-State. What happened that got a holy bleep out of you?
Sorry about that for any of the younger kids are watching. So KU has the ball with 8 seconds left, up three. They turned it over. Houston intercepted the inbounds pass and hit a three to send it to double overtime.
Wow, how about that? All right, well... there are probably some pissed off Auburn and Tennessee fans that aren't getting to watch their game right now, but this is college basketball where games take 3 hours now because officiating sucks, and then sometimes you do get a game that goes to double overtime. Just some other thoughts that I'll throw out here real quick from around the rest of the Big 12 of finals today. Iowa State came back to beat Arizona State by a comfortable margin after they trailed for basically the first 35 minutes of the game. And then Iowa State won by 15. Arizona dismantled Colorado, who is a disgusting-looking team. I mean, I didn't think – I really didn't think that it could be as bad as it was. They're terrible.
Yeah, I was going to say, Kansas State's not even close to the worst team in the Big 12 right now. It's definitely Colorado.
Yeah, I wanted to think, like, man, the way K-State's going, it didn't seem like the buy-in was there. And then I watched Colorado against BYU, and I'm like, man, if they really still like Tad Boyle and they're still trying, they are horrendous. So they got beat pretty bad. TCU got destroyed by UCF 85-58. And then Baylor held off a little push in the second half by Utah, and they won by 15 on the road in Salt Lake City. And then as DY is observing, Houston and KU in double OT right now. And then an intriguing game tonight, Cincinnati on the road at BYU, 9:30 will close out Big 12 play this evening. And then the traditional Sunday, you guys are going to produce a crappy game window. That is Oklahoma State and Texas Tech tomorrow during the NFL. Nobody will be watching. So that'll do it for us. Cats win at 73-60. You got winners in the NFL tomorrow, DY?
I like, man, Chiefs Bills, that's 50-50 to me. I really don't have a pick. I think the Commanders could cover, but I bet the Eagles win.
Okay. All right, well, I'm going to be stupid. I'm going to say the Commanders win and the Chiefs win. Not stupid because the Chiefs win. They're inevitable. They're great. But the Commanders, I keep thinking that the Eagles will slip up at some point. And maybe that's just because I hate the Eagles and everything that has to do with Philadelphia. But
I have a hard time picking a rookie. to go to the Super Bowl.
I'll be honest, though. It'd be a real gut punch to me if the Commanders make it to the Super Bowl. And in my life as a Cowboys fan, the Cowboys have never gone, yet I've seen the Giants and the Eagles and the Commanders all go to a Super Bowl. And it would really be a kick in the crotch if the Commanders somehow won the Super Bowl.
And your defensive coordinator is their head coach.
Yeah, and then the offensive coordinator that couldn't even call plays is now the head coach of the Cowboys. So, a lot of fun. I feel bad for Cooper Beebe and Deuce Vaughn.
And he's hiring the guy that the Bears fired that didn't know how the game of football worked.
Yeah, I'm gonna need a good football season from Chris Klieman and the boys next year because the Dallas Cowboys aren't going to give it to me. All right, that'll do it for us. For Derek Young, I'm Mason Voth. Thanks for watching the KSO postgame live. Cats take down West Virginia 73-60. We will be back in this same manner after the K-State Oklahoma State game on Wednesday. And if you want more postgame coverage on tonight's victory for K-State, go to kstateonline.com over at On3. Take it all in there. And then throughout the rest of the week, you're going to get football coverage. You're going to get some basketball previews for the O-State game and plenty of other things going on right now in the K-State sports landscape. Also, the K-State women will have to try and bounce back next week because 8 days from now, a week from tomorrow, I know that they have a game in between there, but they will have one of their bigger and more important games in terms of what the fans want to see. They will be in Allen Fieldhouse next weekend. So a lot going on with K-State basketball in the next week, both the men and the women. But we'll get out of here. That's Derek Young. I'm Mason Voth. Thanks for watching, and we will be back on Wednesday. What time's the game on Wednesday? Is it a 7 o'clock game?
I think it's 7.
I was going to give the time, but then I couldn't remember exactly. Yeah, 7 o'clock. So we'll be here shortly after 9, maybe way later if the officiating sucks and the game goes long, like it probably will, because that's how college basketball is these days.